The Holy Gospel for this Epiphany is recorded in Matthew, the second chapter. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage. When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. And then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, go and search diligently for the child, and when you found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage. When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. And Scott, my battery died, so I'm going to ask you to just be creative up there. Thanks. Well, here we are. This is actually the 11th day of Christmas, the 12th day of Christmas tomorrow, the real Epiphany. But we're celebrating it today, and it's really the launching of a whole season where we celebrate the revealing, the making known, the Epiphany of Jesus Christ to the world as Savior of the world, and our resulting mission as the church, of course, that begins with this visit of the Magi, the wise men, to the baby Jesus. Now, on the surface, it's this wonderful pageant scene that we did Christmas Eve at 4 o'clock, and wasn't that awesome? It was just beautiful. And it's on our Christmas cards and in our major scenes, these three wise men, these Magi, mysterious, influential religious leaders from Iran, of all places. We've been hearing about this week with the killing of Soleimani, the military leader of Iran, but these three came from Iran with open minds, open hearts, open attitudes toward meeting this babe who they came to realize that was the hinge point of all of history. And of course, when the Magi came to visit, Jesus was simply a baby born to a peasant family in a backwater town, Bethlehem, 9 miles from the seat of power in Jerusalem, right? You might recall, as Tammy shared with us last week, that although this doesn't always go with having political power, Herod was a vicious, vengeful, dishonest ruler. And clearly easily threatened, like all despots of all history can be, by anything that might challenge his power and his control. Even the suggestion that a baby born in Bethlehem might become king of the Jews was a threat to his throne. And that led to that slaughter of all the baby boys under age 2, just to protect his throne from any challengers. Now, we can certainly see those same Herod-like traits in many political leaders here and in other countries around the world, lying, cheating to keep control and power, unconcerned for how decisions might affect the common people, even starting wars to protect positions, hanging on to power by hook or crook. But as I studied this Epiphany story this week, three epiphanies came to me, three revelations. And the first one was this. As much as we might boo and hiss at Herod or as at Hitler or Stalin or Idi Amin or others of his ilk, if we're honest, we all share some of the same traits of Herod within our own selves. We struggle with keeping control and power over things that we find threatening as well. We don't like it when it feels like we're losing control, do we? From kids being grounded by their parents, to parents who, with the best of intentions, try to protect their kids from their own behaviors and hover over them. And sometimes I heard some kids talking about, my parents really are helicopter parents. I hope they stay away this semester in college, you know. To elderly folks going through uncontrollable changes in their lives, one after another as they age. We don't like it. We get scared when we're faced with what we perceive to be threatening situations in our homes, in our communities, in our world. Families of alcoholics really know this struggle for control more than most people, I suspect, because they spend a great deal of time trying to control somebody else's drinking until maybe they have an epiphany of some sort where they become aware of just how powerless they are over this cunning and baffling disease. In my mother's family, one of my six aunts, her sisters, as I was growing up, tried to keep Grandpa Luck and my grandpa, just a sweet and loving guy, but an alcoholic dad, sober enough so that he could walk them down the aisle without falling at their weddings. Well, each one failed. Each one had to prop Grandpa up on their arm all the way down the aisle until it came to my Aunt Judy, who was bound and determined this was never going to happen at her wedding. And so, in fact, she married a Mormon to be sure she wouldn't marry an alcoholic. Great guy, Bob. I love him. They have a great marriage. And then to keep it all under control, furthermore, Judy even had two of my uncles, her brothers-in-law, stay with Grandpa all night to make sure he didn't get into the taverns until morning. And besides that, she had her wedding ceremony set for 10 a.m. to just make sure he couldn't start drinking yet. Well, guess what? The day of that wedding, guess who turned up drunk for her wedding anyway? And you know what? Growing up in that alcoholic but fun-loving but codependent family, no wonder I grew up thinking that I was supposed to manage everybody's crisis and fix everybody's life. For a long time, I thought that. By the way, do you know how you can tell if you're codependent? Here's the acid test. Okay, here it is. You're in a life-threatening car accident, and somebody else's life flashes before your eyes. Okay? That's the acid test. Until we learn these words, I can't control it, I can't cure it, that disease, I have to let it go. Here's an amended version of the Serenity Prayer I heard a while ago that I kind of like because it's for everybody, not just families of alcoholics. God grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know it's me. Well, that leads to my second epiphany this past week. Even though Herod suffered with this illusion that he had the power, that he was in control, we know how history turned out, don't we? As much as Herod had this belief that he was in control, ordering all those little boys under two to be slaughtered to protect his power, who ended up winning? God did. Think about this now. God won. That Roman Empire, under which Herod served, controlling most of the Western world, where is it today? Well, it died either in 453 or in 1432, depending on how you define the Roman Empire. God always wins. That's the second point. God wins. Sooner or later, God is going to have God's way because God is creating a new heavens and a new earth, and it's on its way from that hinge point of the birth of Jesus forward. We're on a new trajectory. God is always winning. the God who in his salvation plan protected the baby Jesus from that slaughter of the holy innocents. And when the Jewish leaders in power thought that the help of the Roman government would help them to take care of the threat to their power by having Jesus executed on a cross, we know how that turned out, don't we? Who ended up winning? God did. And this week, an old poem that maybe you've heard before was coming to me because it was so struck me. Think about this. All the powers in the world and one helpless little baby born in one place in the world has more impact on the world than any human being has ever lived. This is called One Solitary Life. It was written by a Baptist preacher back in the 1920s named James Allen Francis. He was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant. He grew up in another village where he worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family or owned a home. He didn't go to college. He never lived in a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He did none of the things that usually accompany greatness. He had no credentials but himself. He was only 33 when the tide of public opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. One of them denied him. He was turned over to his enemies and went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for his garments, the only property he had on earth. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 20 centuries have come and gone, and today he is the central figure of the human race. I am well within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched, all the navies that ever sailed, all the parliaments that ever sat, all the kings that ever ruled, put together, have not affected the life of this world as much as one solitary life. And when we are in alignment with this one solitary life, and the power of Jesus Christ flowing through us to restore, redeem, and reclaim this lost and broken world, this lost and sin-infested humanity all around us, that's real power. In any area of your life you can name, when you are in alignment with that power of Jesus Christ, that's real power. The power family members of alcoholics can learn how to separate the person from the disease of alcoholism and how to get restored to sanity themselves by admitting they're powerless over this disease and then by turning their own will and life over to the care and power of God. Here's a couple other stories of the redeeming power of Jesus Christ and what happens when someone's in alignment with that power. The kind of power that was shown forth in J.J. Watt, who in his faith commitment raised $41 million during Hurricane Harvey, and who is seen all around Houston all the time with disadvantaged kids and with families in crisis. He gets around everywhere. And sorry, Texas Bills fans, but with that turnaround play last night, if you watch the interviews after the game, how he gave all the credit to his team. Alignment with the power of God that changes the world. The kind of power that was shown forth in the life of another man, Japanese Christian Kiyuni Sugihara, who as a member of the Japanese Foreign Ministry was assigned to Lithuania in the year 1940. And he began to see what was happening to the Jews in Europe. They were flooding into Lithuania, where he was at the embassy, and begging for some way to get exit visas, to get out of the country, to leave Europe. And he wrote three times and begged the Japanese government three times to allow him to write exit visas, and they refused him each time. Finally, he said to his wife one day, "I can't obey my government, I have to obey Jesus Christ." And he started writing exit visas all on his own. Thousands, he wrote 10,000 exit visas in 3 months, and at that point his superiors discovered what he was doing, and he was sent back to Japan and fired, and nobody heard of him about him for years. And then in 1968, some of the survivors of the Holocaust, Jewish survivors, were looking for him. And the Japanese government refused to acknowledge his existence, but they found him back in Japan. And when they found him, they told him that among they and 10,000 other people had been saved by his efforts. He said, "Wow. Well, it would have been worth it if only one person had survived." That's what it looks like to be in alignment with the Christ child power. The kind of power that shows through a group of Lord of Life musicians who hung around here all Christmas Eve to proclaim the birth of the Christ with that incredible music, and then came back the following Sunday for all three services, that jazz band, to proclaim it again, and then showed up again on Christmas, New Year's Eve, to celebrate our 50th anniversary. How awesome is that? Being in alignment with this desire to just celebrate this life we've been given in the birth of the Christ child. When we're in that alignment with the power that comes from the Christ child, we serve less from this need to control things and more from a desire to just give back from what we've received ourselves from the redeeming power in Jesus Christ. To serve as he served, the least, the lost, the lonely, the left out, like Jesus did, that kind of power. Now here's the third remarkable epiphany that came to me this last week about this story. It's this: even when we are out of alignment with the power of God in Jesus Christ and the will of God for our lives, even when we're out of alignment, God uses even our inappropriate uses of power for his purposes. Remember, Herod was used by God for God's purposes. That's why he's in the Bible. Just as the Magi were used, just as Joseph and Mary were used, so was Herod. And when you and I are out of alignment with the goodness and the mercy and the grace and love of God in our lives, and we're running scared and threatened and trying to control things, God uses even our out of alignment for God's purposes. Isn't that amazing? Think about this. God uses even my sinfulness, my mistakes, my misguided attempts to control, all of that. He forgives it, but he uses all those things in my life that were out of whack to move history forward toward the day when all will be restored, reclaimed, redeemed to what God intended in the first place. Isn't that comforting to know? Even my screw-ups, God uses. Wow. So just for a couple more days as we celebrate these last days of Christmas, I hope you can find yourself gratefully spending a moment paying homage, like the wise men, to the Christ child in your manger or under your Christmas tree or here. And during that moment, relishing it one more time, this awesome Christmas power. Pondering in your heart how God is indeed, through this Christ child, through you, beginning to make all things new.